Hello and welcome to another episode of the Polytechnicast. I'm Rob Stenzinger. This is a journal, and it is a journey into sound. No, not really, but kind of. I've been doing this for a super long time, and I appreciate you being here, because doing a journal, the whole point is to externalize your thoughts, right? But then to do a journal that is socially visible, it's a kind of thing where you get to share in these thoughts and you can reply and comment and whatever, or feel seen or confused or anything. It's an opportunity to check in with a fellow creative person who cares about making things and thinks about it, right? So that's what I'm here to do. And last time I checked in, there was a whole bunch of, hey, I'm going to try these different things and let's see how it goes. And now this is, in a way, a part two of, I don't know how many parts, I don't know, 3-4 months ago, where I was saying like, okay, I'm going to do some experiments with teaching interactive design and with creating an arcade cabinet and trying to show up places with that thing. And of course, to push the game itself further, right? And ideally get to version one as, you know, soon as I can, because I could call whatever it is right now version one, but my goal is it for it to become enough, right? It's enough of, let's see, polish, entertainment, a bit of story, and just a lot of playful experience in two different sort of game modes, right? In particular, a cozy mode when you're in the book sanctuary, and then an action mode when you're out there in battle rescuing more books and readers. And by bringing this out in the world again and showing up at events, I get to have more perspective that just helps me learn, like, what have I created? How is it communicating to others, right? And to get that fresh perspective, honestly, that's been going on. So let's do some check-in on that and talk about what might be next. Because, I mean, that's kind of the, you know, where we're at right now with, this is a podcast where I do visit with folks and stuff sometimes, but, you know, for the most part, it's these, you know, the projects I'm working on. And right now it really does feel like I'm probably doing too many projects, right? Like, what would make me think that is, well, I mean, just feeling that way, but then also just kind of seeing the effects of just spinning too many plates. And I love that trick. I think it's such a fun, cool thing. I do not know where I first saw it. It was probably Sesame Street or like Johnny Carson or something, to see someone who has, you know, some sticks poking up on a table and then they put these, you know, dinner plate looking things on top of them and would just spin away and they would try to get like a whole bunch of them going. That's what it feels like right now. But let's see. I would say, sticking with that metaphor, I think there's probably a balance of spinning enough plates where it's fun for me, entertaining for others, and then less messy, right? So here's me doing some reflection. Like, it's not premeditated. This is literally me journaling, figuring it out. So let's go to the arcade cabinet. I posted a gallery of images in the Interactive Storyteller blog, and I'll put a link to that in these notes, that you'll get a piece of, you know, photojournalism looking back at, like, here's me working in my garage, which it doesn't show the temperature. If I was really thinking, I would have put a thermometer right next to me because it was cold. I'm working in the United States during the month of December, January, February, different slices of time, but the garage time was mostly January. And yeah, it was cold working in Minnesota in January in the wintertime. So yeah, I was wearing many layers and just doing the different jobs of like, well, here's this 4-foot by 8-foot piece of plywood that a friend of mine did some updates to his arcade cabinet CAD design and made it so it could be a tabletop version. And here we go. It's just, I had a really just a huge boost by having a strong design for that, and then to be able to print out paper templates and to use those to, you know, essentially plan physical cuts on wood. It was, for me, very helpful, right? Because it has a, there's a nice aesthetic to the shape of the cabinet. I could have simplified it as like, here's a bunch of, you know, rudimentary angles and cuts and the straight lines and stuff, but the, it has nice curves. It has inward curves and outward curves, and the little sort of the upper protrusion that, that gives a nice home for the marquee and the speakers. And like, it just, it looks like an arcade game that you might see pretty much anywhere. You'd recognize it in silhouette. It's not like I did some doodles and I had some ideas on paper that I reached out to that friend, and you know, he was going to help me just with that. But then switching to his cabinet design was awesome. A huge upgrade, right? But also, you know, created more challenges with the kinds of cuts, and then, you know, using a router to make channels for the T-molding and all that stuff, which I got a lot of help from another friend that got me up and running with the, you know, I got some to borrow some really good tools and also learn a lot from seeing how he was doing the woodcuts and managing all these tasks, which I had not done a lot of woodworking for many years, right? And even when I did, it was very rudimentary, simple, straight lines, measure it a few times and then do a cut with a circular saw or that kind of thing. So I'm really thankful with how all that went. But, you know, in the end, it's like I used 3/4-inch plywood. And so I really need to officially weigh it. That machine is definitely a tank. It's heavy compared to what you, you know, you look at it and you might think, oh yeah, that's like a little short bookshelf or something like that. And no, it's got more to it. It's got some heft for better and for worse, right? So going through all those steps that you'll see in the gallery, from the raw wood working to assembly to some painting and refinements and all that, to vinyl artwork on almost every surface of the thing, right? Because I wanted to be ready depending on the kind of events I'd be at. If someone sees it from behind or from slightly above or whatever, I want it to look playful and inviting. Like, clearly this is a interactive toy. It's a piece of art you can come check out, right? And so, well, yeah, got all that together. The soldering, it was a lot, you know, because I took essentially, I don't know how many buttons it is. It's like 50 buttons or so on the top of that machine, and that then connect to a keyboard that effectively becomes a controller, right? So the game is an action game with words. It's called Word Turtle Island, and you definitely can type. It started out as a typing action game, and then I realized that, you know what? It's really about the power of words. So what if you could interact in any kind of control, right? Touch screen, mouse, game controller, all of it, right? And even mix and match. So what works for the arcade is to connect all these buttons and the joystick to a keyboard. And that's done by having these little, I can't remember what they're called, but they're kind of a, you clamp one end of a wire and into this mechanism that you can then slide on. So it's, there's no soldering for one part of the wire, but then the other end gets soldered to a pin, which gets soldered to a keyboard, right? Where the keys have been removed. And a few different keyboards, you can buy them with replaceable keycaps and all that. And some of those you can have replaceable switches as well. So if you get a, that's what I needed. So I found an inexpensive keyboard with replaceable switches that I was able to, you know, connect the buttons to and all the wires, whatnot. But that ended up being just a lot of soldering and, you know, good learning, good adventures and stuff. But definitely, I wouldn't say I'm any kind of expert at soldering, but I have improved a little. And so that's a good thing, I suppose. Anyway, got the cabinet fully ready and playable, and you can just plug it in and it powers up, fully boots into the game, and then keeps the game running if it gets shut down or crashes by accident, which is pretty rare and hard to do with the keys that I connected on the keyboard and stuff. Months ago, but this is another side funny thing, is like along the way to this path, just before I was fully committed to making the arcade machine, I was like, I wonder if I can get Word Turtle Island to run on a Raspberry Pi. And it's really funny because I just did research recently after telling the story of me trying to do that. And I'll be darned if it doesn't seem like some folks through the, you know, this forum and that forum say it's possible. And even through the official GitHub repository and comments and stuff saying like, oh, now look at Godot can export to, you know, Raspberry Pi and run with the big constraint I ran into was the video driver has to support GLES 3.1. And that stands for a standard called OpenGL Embedded Systems version 3.1. I tried it and I couldn't get it to work. When I've told folks the story, I said I spent like 2 weeks. It was part-time, but it was real work. And I felt like it was pretty conclusive when I reached the end. A few months passed now, and I really wish I could get this to run on a Raspberry Pi. Because it would be cheaper to build another arcade cabinet. I had two events set up, but they're back-to-back. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 1 week. And then the very next week, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. The first week, it was Midwest Gaming Classic. That event is in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and it serves a whole lot of gaming communities, board games, video games, modern, classic, pinball, you name it. Vendors with memorabilia, old stuff, new stuff. It's big, and there's tons of programming. People debut games at this event, and it's somewhere between 30 to 40,000 people. I don't know the final number from this year, but last year they said it was 30. There was rumor that it was more this year. I don't know, but it was a lot of people. It's big, it's noisy, it's fun, and a lot of traffic, a lot of people. When they came by the table, and you check out the photo gallery, you'll see the picture of like the table setup, both when I experimented in my own office at home and then went on the road, you'll see the real table setup. And it's got this tabletop arcade game, very colorful, big, tons of buttons, very shiny and curiosity invoking, right? That's the feature thing on the table. And then next to it, I had the game running also on a tablet screen sitting there on a stand, and then also a Steam Deck. So three screens pretty easily fitting into a, you know, a smallish space. And then, you know, a banner sign and a couple of hand-printed posters hanging up there behind it. And it was great. It was eye-catching, and people would stop by, curious about the game, curious about the arcade, and, you know, made some people would go visit Steam afterward or Google Play and, you know, made a few sales and all that stuff. One thing that was surprising is that a couple people expressed interest, like, hey, can I buy this machine? And one of them in particular was like, can I buy this machine, like, right now? And I'm like, whoa, part of me, when I saw the machine coming together, I thought, I wonder what will happen. Like what I see, this is a strong product. Like I've made strong products in the past. And when I see them and I face them, I think, huh, someone's going to like this. I don't feel arrogant or gloating or whatever. It's just like, oh, wow, I just did something. Someone's going to like this. And even that arcade, I'm like, someone's going to want to buy this. I'll be darned. Someone did, but I didn't sell it, right? I like the signal and it makes me curious. And I am definitely on the side, you know, this whole journal started with me saying, I'm probably spinning too many plates. I'm entertaining the idea of spinning this plate of doing like, you know, small manufacturing, just saying, well, okay, give me 3 or 4 weeks lead time and I'll make another arcade cabinet, right? For such and such price. It's intriguing. It's intriguing. It's either, at the very least, it's positive and what great feedback to get, and it's encouraging. There's really only 1 month that in the 9 months that it's been out in the store in early access that I have not updated Word Turtle Island. And it's pretty much that time was me borrowing time from the software project to make the arcade project happen. But here it is. What if there's anything like with that piece of the story so far, it's like, what do I hope goes better? What do I think I need to figure out? Oh yeah. First one was Midwest Gaming Classic. The second one was VGM Con, which stands for Video Game Music Convention. VGM has a totally different feel than Midwest Gaming Classic. Midwest Gaming Classic is like an auto show, and it's huge, right? It's in a big venue, and it's just lots everywhere. VGM is a lot, but it's a smaller venue, and it's driven by this musician community who loves video game music. And so you'll hear people practicing in some areas. You'll see small bands just forming out of nowhere, starting to play in different sections of the hotel. Then there's like planned meetups and jam sessions and all. And then there's the big performances. It's all this, and it's awesome. It's like you can't walk anywhere without hearing some kind of cool stuff going on. And it's amazing. And as a musician, it's super inspiring. So you're hearing like, sometimes it's anime soundtrack stuff, or like there was a group playing the song Tank by the Seatbelts, that which is from the Cowboy Bebop anime soundtrack. Quite the big deal for me and my wife. We played that song at our wedding, right? And it was not us actually playing the song. We played a recording of the song. But it was, encountering like, oh, wow, the Zelda's theme is over here. Someone's playing a Sonic, two-level theme, on and on, everywhere, all kinds of cool stuff. Of course, Castlevania, you name it, right? So then they had a room set aside for the indie devs. It was really cool. A neat group of developers exhibiting their work, and a lot of really cool visits from the attendees. Really good traffic. It's one of those things where you could be in a room off to the side, and if you're in a situation where that event isn't really about your stuff, it might be kind of quiet, right? But it wasn't. It was really a nice flow of people the whole time. I loved it. And the feel of that event is just particularly magical because of the music aspect. Lots of great playing and all that, and lots of feedback and great testing. Between the two events, I took 60 pages of notes. So I had a lot of data to go through. And now that both events were done, what does it mean? What did I learn? Like things like, the classic buckets that you can name them other things. I don't mind just using feasibility, viability, and desirability. And it's like you think about something that I might need to make or change, or something that, like, let's say multiple people wanted multiplayer and different kinds of multiplayer and stuff like that. So I'm like, I'll look into it. That's not going to make it into version one, right? So because it's feasible for me to make, just like this whole game has been feasible for me to make. But whenever you make a project, if you're building it off of already established strong capabilities and habits, right? It's different than if you're making new capabilities and habits. And each one, and different if you're making a project out of many new capabilities and habits than just one new capability, right? So for me, this has been a journey of leveling up with a more complex game that I'm developing by myself that has many systems to it, right? And then two different main ways of interacting, right? So there's the battle where there's the danger and stuff, and then there's the home base, cozy, safe place too, which is also a game. So I've got sort of two different game modes, systems like inventory and leveling up and, weapons and items and powers and et cetera, right? So it's way bigger than This Panda Needs You or Guitar Fretter or Underwater Tomato Ninja or, any other, or Sight Fight Sight, et cetera. It's any other game I've made in the past. Way bigger. And I had to build all those things, right? And then build new capabilities, et cetera. Needed new story, new music, anyway, significantly huge. So when I see a new thing come along and I'm getting close to version one, even if it's an attractive idea, it's not making it on the list, right? And it's like that can be for the next game, a spinoff, a new mode in a future edition or downloadable content or some other business endeavor beyond the one that is Word Turtle Island. Going through all the data, here's some bugs, here's some things to fix, here's some refinements and all that stuff. I've gone through it and, themed, grouped it, kind of feedback, prioritized it, and have filtered. And you know, and of course I didn't give you examples about the, cause I mentioned feasible, but then there's also, you know, viable and desirable. And, you know, those things, it's like, I'm looking at what people are enjoying about the game and also viable. I'm also looking at how many people went and bought it after playing it. Right. Cause you know, that's real observable evidence. Wish lists are nice too. Right. So any kind of actual observable behavior that people do, what they say is important too, but like, you know, the combination of what they say and what they do is where you get a lot of good research info. And anyway, that was quite the adventure, getting ready for this, expoing, learning from it, and now getting set up as far as here's what I think now is my refined goal for version one. So there I am, right? Now, spinning plate metaphor, I'm spinning a plate about teaching interactive design. And I've had mixed success. I've reached some people and got some good comments and stuff, especially on TikTok. And also, oddly enough, I've taken to really like editing with CapCut because it's got this right balance of price and features and stuff like that. Like you can edit video by just editing the transcription and it'll just cut the video based on whatever text you cut and stuff, which is a key feature of another tool I've tried called Descript, but it's built into CapCut and CapCut's cheaper and it does way more anyway. But the videos I edit in CapCut don't seem to do as well on TikTok as if I just record right there in the built-in experience in the app. Super weird. But anyway, it's been good as a practice as far as product development to be like, well, I'm honing thoughts about micro lessons. I'm recording the thing, editing it down to its essence, and then doing a little bit of annotation with overlay text and stuff. And between all that, it's like, oh yeah, this is becoming a nice little draft of a learning module. So that's cool, the product development aspect. And then helping some folks. That's the drive behind it where it's like, if I post things that someone can really use to make money, that is probably the best kind of thing I can post. And when it comes to advocacy, I don't mind doing some of that for free, right? If I do too much of it, I start to think, well, you know, someone should be paying me for this. And I struggle with that, right? But that's why I am focusing on the interactive design instead of only doing show and tell about Word Turtle Island, because somewhat too, it's nice variety for me. It works for my brain to not just have one problem to solve. And even though Word Turtle Island is itself a bucket of many different kinds of problems, it's still, you know, posting and talking about only it just, I don't know, it feels blah to me. Anyway, teaching interactive design, the outreach part has been going okay, could be better. But then there's this other stuff of I'm developing, you know, I pretty much I have the raw draft of my workshop that's built on an already existing full tested draft of doing paper prototyping for game design, right? I love that one, can't wait. But my brain has been magnetically attracted to a freaking topic that is such a quagmire, right? And I know some friends and artists who are going to listen to this, and I do not want to frustrate you at all because I love you and I love me and I'm an artist and I want to do right by all of us, right? But I'm talking about being creative with AI and also without AI, because I started thinking through doing some testing with this, and this is a whole giant can of worms topic, but the gist of it is that my suspicion has held me back a ton, right? And the idea that AI is theft is completely correct, right? So how could you use this tool and et cetera, right? And then when I start to analyze and I get curious and I wonder and I explore and I find how other people are doing it, I find there is an interesting space of possibility to ethically use AI as a kind of planning collaborative tool, but not a final performance tool. Like to actually have, like, if you've got the motivation to do something for nothing, I got nothing for you. I don't want it, those people taking that class, right? But I also don't want to injure artists because the crime is too fresh, right? There's no apology whatsoever from the community who just went and stole a bunch of art and said, ha ha, look at the thing I made, which is painful and it sucks, right? But then here you have, like, I don't think I'm alone and having some kind of quirky neural circumstance. And, you know, looking at folks giving talks about, you know, hey, using AI to help them plan their week or help them prioritize some tasks or give me ideas for how to clean up this room because I'm overwhelmed and not sure what to do. So here you have something that is, even if it's a bad assistant, it's breaking you out of your own thoughts and stuff. And I, all of a sudden I start to see possibility and my curiosity is piqued and I wonder. So I've been in this curious, wondering, puzzling, drafting stage about this kind of workshop for a little bit. I've got activities worked out and all kinds of stuff, but I'm also teetering. I'm making this workshop that is inherently hypothetical because I don't know if I'm going to publish it. So that's a fun plate to be spinning that I probably shouldn't be spinning. I got to decide if is it hypothetical or not. But I like that as I'm giving it time, I'm working through these things, like the, you know, thoughts about the ethics of AI and thoughts about painting in broad brushes and hyperboles. All of us get blinded and you can't, it's like just piles of noise, right? So it more or less makes sense to just not use it if we're only stuck in the world of hyperpolar, you know, screaming, loving, hating, whatever, or embracing without question, right? Like this is not the space. Like I don't embrace anything practically ever without questioning. And if you've listened to my podcast or seen my writing or whatever, it's like you probably get that, right? Anyway, so I still have a hunch that there's something there and I'm continuing with that project. It's gone through like 100 different titles because it's a tough thing to say where it's like, you know, creating ethically with and without AI as a collaborative creative tool, but not a final creative output, right? That's not a great title, but you get the gist of where I'm going with what I hope to figure out with that. All right. And then there's the what next, right? So if this update is all about the experiments in progress, then there's this other category of, you know, figuring out my overall, you know, art, business, machine, mechanism, which is a combo of showing up with products, but also showing up as a human being and posting and sharing in different formats. I've been using the free Buffer app tier to help me with posting across a few social networks, the Blue Sky, Threads, and Instagram. And that's helped me a lot because I just get really stuck in seeing all the different ways and the assumptions in the design of how the social networks work. And then I think, well, maybe I'll randomly post in one, but I'm not going to bother doing it elsewhere. So Buffer has helped me a bit for that. And I'm continuing that experiment, but there is definitely more to do as far as I'm hoping to do streaming experiments to do a little show and tell, and then turn that into other clips, right? We'll see if I can manage that. But the idea is in different forms, like connect Word Turtle Island up and maybe a camera or two and say, here you go. Here I am. I'm playing my game, going to talk about it and whatnot. Or potentially other work sessions too, because I've got some art to do and I've got some music to do. And both of those would be good fits for that. Oddly enough, Steam, like the actual, you know, game venue platform, right? You can stream to your own product page. And so I'm curious to see what that will look like. Anyway, so this is all ongoing. Like I wish I was like, hey, this update, and I was spinning plates, and guess what? I'm not spinning this plate anymore. I'm still spinning the same plates. So anyway, okay. So I'm curious if you have questions about things you would like me to answer in showing up with my posting in the different places, which one of those places is I'm experimenting with a fourth wall presence, right? So if you're like, I don't really need to follow you in yet another place, but I'd like to support your work, you can do that there. It's almost like my new version of ko-fi or buy me a coffee or something like that, right? So I'm there at fourth wall and exploring different things. Would love to hear your questions, and I'll put it out there in whatever makes sense as a Polytechnicast or a blog post or a newsletter or what have you. But you know, if you're curious about anything, the development process for this, product strategy for this, what, you know, reactions to the interactive design teaching or the classes I'm talking about, right? The old, you know, the paper prototyping, which it has no controversy to it whatsoever, or the highly controversial one where I'm considering essentially talking about creative process and examples and activities both with and without AI. Because the idea there would be like, what would you possibly hire it for ethically, right? And it may be something, it may not be anything, or it may be that you hate it, but now you know why, then you've got some more examples, or I don't know, right? But yeah, that class probably would get you thinking and have some questions you'd want me to delve into, or your rationale for why I should just walk away. I'd love to hear it, you know, whatever I end up choosing, and I respect that. And I hope, you know, we have that mutuality in our shared respect. So you can always email me at rob@shieldsstenzinger.com. And super thank you very much for listening. Let's get this. Ha ha.